From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
I'm Melissa Block, and it's officially spring. The birds will let you know. Nearly a century ago, the naturalist F. Schuyler Matthews wrote, "It is not possible to listen to the melody of the song sparrow without realizing that we are released from the cold clutch of winter and set down in the comfortable lap of spring." F. Schuyler Matthews was a bird lover and a composer and an artist. He'd go out into the fields and woods around his home in Campden, New Hampshire, and write down the songs the birds were singing. He'd translate birdsong into musical notes. His field book of wild birds and their music was first published in 1904, the first major effort of its kind. 82 species, with his watercolor illustrations and the bird songs captured on the page. So the song of the whippoorwill in this modern recording, nature's virtuoso of the nocturne in Matthew's description, sounds like this on flute using his notation. Now the bobwhite. And on flute. Some songs are harder to capture. Here's the American robin. And here's Matthew's rendering. We were prompted to page through F. Schuyler Matthews' work because of a condensed version of his field book that's just been published. It's been adapted and re-illustrated by Judy Pelican under the title The Music of Wild Birds. She says she got her inspiration on a walk through a field near her home in Franconia, New Hampshire, not far from where Matthews once lived. She came upon two birch trees with five strands of barbed wire strung between them.
It looked like a musical staff, exactly. And then there were these little fledgling fooling around, and it was just so fun because they lighted, and they were could be three different notes on these wires. And my imagination just thought, this is really wonderful.
That encounter would eventually lead her to Matthew's book. And her new version of that book led us to Steve Nowicki, who teaches biology at Duke University. He uses Matthew's 100-year-old guide in his lectures and says he's still amazed by what Matthews did.
It was a challenging proposition because as musicians read these, they find that they're very hard to follow. The birds are performing really difficult pieces of music in some cases, certainly not idiomatic for any instrument that we would play. And also, as an ornithologist listening to the transcriptions, you can also see that Matthews had to fudge it a little bit because birds aren't constraining themselves to half notes or semi-demi-quavers. They're really much more bending this like a jazz musician would be. And anybody who's tried to transcribe, say, a Miles Davis solo knows how hard it is to do that as well.
There's a fun part in this book where Schuyler Matthews admits that he basically can't get onto the page what a bird is doing with his song, and that's in the case of the bobolink.
Yes, that is true. That's one of my favorite notations. It's a little bit like a cartoon of music when the music just gets out of control and the notes just start jumping off the page. You can imagine this is something, and maybe it was, that happened in Disney's Fantasia at some point. And, you know, indeed, that's exactly the impression you would get with the bobolink, because it starts out with a fairly orderly song, but by the time you get to the end of this song, it's really just out of control.
He seems to combine all sorts of things here. He's got this musical ability to transcribe these sounds, however imperfectly, and he's got a remarkable gift of language in his description. I was especially taken with how he describes the scarlet tanager. This is on page 105, and I wonder if you might read that for us.
Yes, this is a wonderful one. "There is a lazy, drowsy, dozy buzz to this beautiful bird's voice which one can only liken to a giant musical bumblebee or an old-time hurdy-gurdy." The unobtrusive music of the scarlet tanager speaks of summer's peace and rest, soft zephyrs blowing over sighing pine trees and tinkling shallows of woodland brooks. I couldn't agree more. I mean, in reading that is an image that I would get when I think of listening to a Scarlet Tanager. He's capturing not only the bird's song, but in a sense, part of the bird's ecology, where you'd find these birds in his very rich descriptions.
In his field book, F. Schuyler Matthews does sometimes admit that he's stumped. Take the hermit thrush. The superb songster, the bird of genius with tones of burnished silver. He asks, how can the meager outlines of music notation convey such truths? Who can justly report the hermit's song? So when Matthews gets to the chickadee, you can feel his relief. The chickadee knows the value of a well-sustained half note, he writes, which should be scored in the little musician's favor. We found another fan of F. Schuyler Matthews in composer and naturalist Doug Quinn. He took many of Matthews' bird song transcriptions, set them to clarinet, and wove them into this musical piece, along with natural sound.
That was the rose-breasted grosbeak. And that's the indigo bunting.
Doug Quinn says now you can take a spectrograph and break down birdsong into its component parts, precise renderings of pitch and duration spat out through a computer. 100 years ago, F. Schuyler Matthews had only his ears.
One of the marvels, and I think one of the joys of seeing this book come back after 100 years, is that they didn't have field recording capability then. I mean, Edison had invented his recording machine, but it wasn't exactly portable, and I think it required people to have a tremendous oral acuity to be able to listen with such detail and precision, and through musical interpretation and descriptive writing to really come to know birdsong in a very different way than I think the modern ear would.
Do you think we've gotten lazier in how we listen to birds?
I think we take it for granted, and I think to the modern listener, we live in a very acoustically competitive environment. We deal with a lot of noise, and I think we're pressed very often to edit things out just because of sheer overcrowded bandwidth, as it were. And so I think that kind of focused listening requires a certain amount of discipline. Active listening as opposed to passive listening makes demands on us that are just that, demands.
Composer Doug Quinn, and before that, Professor Steve Nowicki, talking about the naturalist and composer F. Schuyler Matthews. The new adaptation of Matthews' field book by Judy Pelican is titled The Music of Wild Birds. You can find some of F. Schuyler Matthews' musical notations and recordings of bird calls at our website, npr.org. This is All Things Considered from NPR News.